Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Luke's English Podcast, which is supported thanks to donations from my listeners. And thank you if you've donated recently. If you'd like to donate, just go to the website and click donate. It's pretty simple. So thanks for the donations. Also, support for the podcast comes from my sponsors. The sponsor for this episode is iTalki. And basically, that's just a way for you to find teachers online. It's a bit like a virtual language school where you can go and find yourself a one-to-one teacher. You can have lessons, and lessons can be tailored to your particular needs. For example, if you've got a job interview coming up, or if you want to work on your exam skills for the IELTS exam, something like that, or if you just generally want to improve your spoken English, let's say, or your grammatical accuracy, or your range of vocabulary. If you want to improve your English for any reason, you can find a one-to-one teacher, or you can just find a native speaker to talk to on a regular basis. If you just need loads of speaking practice, that's possible too. And iTalki will give you a voucher which is worth the equivalent of a free lesson when you buy some talking time. To get that offer, go to teacherluke.co.uk/talk or click an iTalki logo on my website. Okay, good. Right then, so here's this new episode, and we will start the episode properly as soon as the jingle happens. When's the jingle going to happen, Luke? The jingle is going to happen right now. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello, ladies and gentlemen of podcast land. Welcome to another episode of this podcast for learners of English. How are you? How are you, though? How the hell are you? He said in a way that was strange. I've got coffee. I've just had my lunch. It was very nice. Thank you for asking, even though you didn't ask, although you may have asked in your head. This is a strange beginning, isn't it? This is a strange way to open an episode, but I'm going to carry on, all right? Sometimes when I do the intro to episodes, I sort of say something stupid by mistake and it kind of goes wrong and I get frustrated and I start again. But I've decided I'm going to just keep going with this one. No stopping. I don't have time. Anyway, I've got coffee. Did I say that already? I can't remember. But I have got coffee. You don't need to know that, but I just wanted to tell you. I wanted to celebrate the fact that I've got a cup of coffee. You know, when you've got a cup of coffee and you feel good about it and you want the whole world to know. You know that feeling? That whole idea was the basis of like Twitter and Instagram, wasn't it, in the beginning? Hey, look, everyone, I'm going to have some coffee. Or Luke Thompson is enjoying a cup of coffee or something. Anyway, I've got coffee, which is nice. Have you got a hot drink? Leave your comments in the comment section if you're also enjoying a beverage. Anyway, welcome to the podcast. I haven't planned this intro in advance. I mean, I haven't written it all out, which is why it's kind of rambling and going off all over the place. It's hard to sort of keep myself focused when I haven't written everything down in advance. But anyway, Luke, focus! Focus, man! Okay, in this episode, I'm talking to my friend Raphael. And in this one, he's going to he's already told me. And I recorded the conversation, and you're going to listen to us talking about Raph's summer. So if you remember from a previous episode of this podcast, it was in April, I spoke to Raph Miller about the fact that he set up his own summer school in Liverpool, right? He set up his summer school, and I was talking to him about that, about his summer school. It's called Your English Summer. And this is a place, it's a place where teenagers can come during the summer and work on their English. And it sounds like a really cool project. Raf is an old friend of mine. We used to work together at the London School of English in London years ago, and I got to know him by working alongside him in the teacher's room and all that stuff. And I moved to France, and Raf left the London School, and he set up his own summer school. As I said, it's called Your English Summer. Interesting project. And I spoke to him about it in April. If you remember, we kind of talked about all sorts of things. Anyway, he talked to us about his summer school plans. And then, you know, that was April. Then we had May and then June and then July and August, of course. That's the way months work. And then, so during that time, Raf had his summer school experience. The kids came. He had teenagers coming to his school and stuff. It was all done in a school that Raf actually used to go to when he was a kid in Liverpool. So somehow he's managed to get the use of that building for his summer school. And so basically in this episode, he's going to tell us about what happened during the summer. And, you know, so you might be thinking, oh, I wonder how it went. How was it for him? How were the teenagers? Where did they come from? What were they like? What kinds of things did they do? How was it for their English? Generally, tell us about what happened, Raf. That's what you might be thinking. Well, I hope you are thinking that, because that's exactly what's going to happen in this episode. That's it, basically. It's nice. It's a nice conversation. I always enjoy talking to Raphael, and I'm, you know, personally interested in his project. And it sounds like the summer was great and everyone had a really fantastic experience. So that's it. You can now enjoy listening to the two of us talking about it. My first question to Raf was, where are you at this moment? And that's where we start the conversation. So I'm now going to continue drinking my coffee. I'm giving you permission to also enjoy a beverage, either hot or cold or just ambient temperature, while you enjoy listening to my conversation with Raphael Miller, talking about his experience with Your English Summer, which happened this summer. Okay. Oh, it's just become Alan Partridge now. Okay. I'm going to stop talking. So that you can actually listen to the conversation. All right, thank you.
Well, I'm where you found me last, back in Leeds, mm-hmm. Wonderful Leeds up in the northeast of England, not too far from Liverpool. But yeah, I'm in Leeds at the moment at home.
Okay, so you actually live in Leeds, but the summer school is in Liverpool.
That's right. Okay. That's right. It's close. They're really close together. I know you know that.
Yeah.
But you know, for the benefit of your listeners, it's literally about an hour and a half drive over to the west.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's pretty easy, which is quite handy this year. Because obviously previous summer schools I've worked at, you know, they're usually like down south, which is really far from, well, for English scale, you know, it's really far away from Leeds. So it's a little bit tricky for kind of the home life and everything, but with it being in Liverpool, you can just kind of nip back and forwards fairly easily.
Mm, convenient. Mm. So it's September.
Yes.
And you survived the summer.
Yeah, everyone did. All staff and students, myself included, all powered through. Yeah, it was an absolute blast, man. You know,
was it good?
Yeah, it was. It really was, though. You know, I was very kind of confident about how it would go. Mm. You know, with the experience of previous ones I've worked at and managed and stuff. But you never know how people are going to get on, you know, be it the students or the staff or the students with the staff and things like that. And everybody was new. I hadn't worked with anybody before. So even though it's a really small team and a small group of students, there are still lots of potential variables and unforeseen kind of bits and pieces. But yeah, it was great, man. So I'm absolutely over the moon with how it went.
That's like fantastic.
All in all.
Give us an overview, like how many students, how many members of staff?
Yeah, so we had five members of staff and then two like group leaders, mm-hmm. So kind of like sort of like staff as well. And then we had 24 students. So, you know, for a summer school, that's really quite small. But for a group of people, you know, it's quite nice. Like they... Because, I mean, to begin with, I was a little bit apprehensive about the number of students that were coming. but it was amazing, like how tight knit that group of students became. So even though I think usually it's better to have more than that, with it being the first year, especially, it was kind of almost a blessing in disguise, really, because, you know, everybody really got to know each other and was basically just a really close, really tight group. And, you know, they just had a lot more fun that way, I think. And also with it being smaller, it's just so much more manageable. You know, like if it's really big, especially in the first year, you can get distracted and miss things. But when it's a small group, I got to know every single student like pretty well. Yeah. Whereas before, when I've worked in a summer school with like 200 kids, you know, it's like there are kids at the end of the 2 weeks, you see them and you're like, who's that kid? I've never seen that kid before, you know? So, yeah. It's quite a different kind of kettle of fish. So yeah, it was cool. So they were all on site, you know, living in the accommodation and everything and, you know, all kind of close by and it was perfect.
Ages of the kids?
Yeah, so the oldest was 16. Mm-hmm. And the youngest was actually 11. So the age range was meant to be 12 to 16. But then as part of this group, you know, you can sort of make an exception if it's a group. There was one kid who was 11. So because he's coming with all his mates and he had a group leader and everything who was there to kind of give extra support, it didn't really matter. And, you know, it was in any case, it would have been fine. I think even if it had been an individual alone, because it was a small school, it would have been fine. It's just when you have like a massive school, you can't really have like a random like 11-year-old just floating about because they might get a little bit homesick and a bit kind of lost in the mix, you know. But so 11 to 16.
Okay. Basically. From where were they from?
So Italy, mm-hmm. Spain, Germany, China, Poland, and Switzerland. So six nationalities.
Okay.
So not bad representation for the numbers that we had, I think. It was nice. It was a really nice mix.
Do you find that the kids from the different places are different in terms of their behavior and stuff?
We had a group of Italian students, so, you know, they brought like serious energy.
Yeah.
You know, so I think they conformed to the national kind of characteristics pretty effectively. You know, I'm never a big believer in like stereotypes and all of that sort of thing, but, you know, the Italian like teenagers that we had, they were the way you think of like Italian teenagers as being, you know, like very energetic and like, you know, just always chatting to each other and like shouting and just, you know, just tons of energy basically. Whereas and also I'd say like just quite relaxed about getting from place to place. You know, so you'd sort of be like, okay guys, let's go and like go to the sports hall or whatever, and the pace, the walking pace was, you know, was leisurely, shall I say. Whereas some of the other students from, say, like Germany, they'd be kind of at the front, like sort of saying to me, what's going on? Like, why are they walking so slowly? So it's quite, it's quite kind of funny to see the way in which they reacted to each other's behavior. You know, it's never like a problem. It's just really interesting.
For some of them, do you think it was the first time that they'd come face to face with kids from other countries?
I didn't really ask that too much because you just assume, don't you, like in this nowadays, but it's possible, you know, or at least in such an intense environment, you know, at such sort of close quarters, because you know, nowadays obviously you kind of, you know, you see everything online or on TV or whatever. I guess if you live in a fairly like average sized town or city, and you're not necessarily going to be, you know, knocking about with people from lots of different countries all the time. It might have been. I sort of asked them, for some of them, I know that it was their first time in the UK and their first time at a summer school for most of them. I didn't ask them if it was like with kind of time spent with other nationalities. But I think for a lot of them, it was definitely the first time they met a Chinese person. And that was just like, it was just really curious because the Italian guys arrived first. And then I told them that there was a student coming from China. And it just like this guy from China, he became like a celebrity. It was really weird. They were like, Rav, when's the Chinese guy getting here? You know, like, they were like, where's the Chinese guy? Where? And I was like, oh, his name is Sean. And they were like, oh, where's Sean? You know, like, so this kind of personality cult built up around this guy. You know, I don't know why. Like, they were just sort of really fascinated. And it wasn't like when he arrived, there was this big eruption of chaos. It was just like normal, but I guess they just wanted to hang out with someone from a country that was really far away or something I don't know.
Fascinated to see what the Chinese guy was like, but yeah, interesting the way that sort of kids or young people pick up on things like global trends and stuff. You know, they probably just felt like this guy was they'd heard stuff about China and how China's like this booming place and all that.
Yeah.
And so different and different language and stuff. And yeah, so I suppose they were just curious to actually meet someone. And how did Sean get on? Was he the only Chinese guy there?
Yeah. So he had a great time, you know. He sort of emailed me afterwards and would like to say thank you. And like one, like, the only student actually to email me directly afterwards, you know.
Yeah.
So you get lots of emails of thanks from parents and things, but not usually from a student. It's quite unusual. So he sort of like took the time to send me something directly, which I was quite touched by. He seemed to have a ball. He had an uncle who is fairly nearby, so that was, I think was quite good for him.
Yeah.
You know, rather than being, you know, 6,000 or 5,000 miles or whatever it is to the east side of China.
Yeah.
Completely on his own, you know, which is always quite, I mean, he was a little bit older, like he was 16, but still, I think, you know, if you just jetted all the way over on your own,
yeah,
it would be just, I don't know, like, I mean, he said he hadn't been to the UK before. So, you know, it's just like, straight out of his comfort zone really, as you can imagine. But you know, I'm always just quite taken aback by the kids at summer school, really, like, you know, when they just come and they just get stuck in, like, straight away, like, they don't, I can't imagine being 14 myself and just, you know, just going off and like just meeting like 200 other people I'd never met before and just spending, you know, 2 weeks with them or something, like every single day, you know, every meal, every day. And a lot of schools, not our school, but, you know, in our school, all the rooms are individual.
Yeah.
So, you know, at least at night, you kind of got time to yourself, like, you know, as a student, and you can maybe, like, you know, gather your thoughts a little bit. Whereas in a lot of summer schools, all the kids are just like together in dorms, it's like four or five, three or four in a dorm. So it's just like full on, like 24/7, you know, you're never really on your own, which is good for younger ones, to be honest, because it distracts them from being homesick.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think if you are sort of 4,000 miles from home and you're just in with a kind of like a little group of kids, like, all, I don't know, it's just such an unreal experience, I think. You know?
Yeah. So they made friends across the national sort of groups. I mean,
they were
all making friends across different nationalities then, were they?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, because the Italian students all knew each other already, so they kind of obviously had no problem, because they were there with a few of their own friends already, sort of thing. But they still would, you know, be speaking in English to the other students and, you know, getting to know them. Obviously, sometimes different students get on better and they just want to make new friends, or they kind of maybe not have that many friends in the group that they've come with, so they want to branch out. And it was just nice, you know, to sort of see them like getting to know each other in the tentative, faltering conversations to begin with, and then it just sort of like blossoms and picks up momentum as it goes along, you know.
Yeah.
And also what we did, because I thought it would be an interesting extra thing, as well as meeting students from other countries, like to meet local kids as well.
Yeah.
You know, so we brought in like a youth group, like a Liverpool youth group. So all our kids could meet like loads of Scousers, basically.
Oh my God. Brilliant.
So they were like trying to, and they, you know, they had really good Liverpool accents as well. So it was like, you know, a new challenge. Like, okay, you have to speak international English and you know, practice this way, and then you can meet people your own age but who are locals as well. So it was just, you know, they were kind of practicing in lots of different ways, but that's definitely something, because we did it a bit this year just to test drive it.
Yeah,
but next year gonna integrate it all the way through, really. So when our students are doing like activities in the afternoon, they'll be doing those activities just with other international students and locals as well. So it's just even more English, you know. It's really built in. They're really like living in the language that little bit more, you know. So
yeah.
You know, that's the plan. That's the plan for next year. But it was that was really good fun, you know, when we brought the locals in. It was really cool.
That sounds great. So have you got any little stories then of some things that happened? Like, what did you actually do then? Tell us some of the things that you did with the kids.
Yeah, like outside of classes and things like that, you mean?
Yeah, well, you know, anything, like, you know, just give us an idea of a day, or if you could just tell us, yeah, like give us an overview of a typical day.
And a
maybe
taster.
Maybe share it with us, some of the specific things that happened as well.
Yeah. I mean, my days were always really long, basically, you know?
Yeah.
From about 6 a.m. to about midnight, because, you know, I always wanted to be up and getting things organized and have a really clear idea of how the day was going to unfold in my head. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just every day there's like a little something will just happen, and it's kind of like, oh yeah, I must remember about to give this to this kid, or to pass this message on to this student, or to ask this teacher this, you know. Mm-hmm. So you kind of just got a list of things to do every day that's like as long as your arm.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, students, you know, they would get up each day we'd wake them up about sort of 7:30. Mm-hmm. Which wasn't appreciated too much, especially towards the end.
What, so were they? Were they actually?
Next year we might have a lion day in the second week.
Good idea.
Because towards the end of the second week, you know, the students, they were really enjoying themselves, but it's just it's a lot. You know, they're doing stuff every single day, so you know they were. Maybe a few of them were pretty shattered, basically, by the time they went home,
and they,
but in a good way.
Yeah, but they didn't want to like get up, for example, on, you know, near the end of the course. I can imagine one or two days where you're like, right, it's 7:30, come on up.
Yeah.
And they're like saying, no, I don't want to get up.
Yeah, a little. I mean, it would be just like you wouldn't hear anything. You'd knock on the door. Yeah. And like, there'd just be like no response. She'd be there kind of banging on the door, and then eventually they'd just give in and they'd be like, yes, what? You know? So you're kind of like, come on, it's breakfast. So yeah, you get them, go down for breakfast. Breakfast's always quite quiet, you know, everybody's just kind of waking up still.
Yeah.
And then we just go straight into lessons from breakfast. So lessons all the way through until lunch. It's like 3 hours every morning. Mm-hmm. With like a half hour break in the middle. So in the break, the weather was amazing pretty much the whole way through. So in the break we just go out onto the field, like throw frisbees around, like kids can just chill, like read, do whatever they want, you know, really. And then in the afternoon, activities, so like after lunch, like sports, or we did like tie-dye t-shirt making, did baking, like football, tennis.
Well, tie-dye t-shirt making.
Yeah, no, it was amazing.
What's that?
So you get a white t-shirt, you wet it, so you just like soak it in a bucket of water. Mm-hmm. And then it's like what the hippies used to do in the 60s, you know, like you see people at Burning Man festival or whatever, like just covered in tie-dye.
Yeah.
So you soak the t-shirt in water, and then you scrunch it up in some way, so you kind of like twist it into a spiral or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you tie it, so you use elastic bands to hold it in place.
Yeah.
And then you just get little pots of paint. Mm-hmm. And just put droplets of paint on the t-shirt, and it just like soaks through.
Yeah.
So then you leave it for, I think you leave it for 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And then you open up you untie it and you open up the t-shirt, and it just creates all these like crazy like psychedelic patterns.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah,
I mean, it's actually really, really good fun. I did one as well, and yeah, you can just kind of go crazy with the colors, or just do like one or two colors, or yeah, all the students did one. Some of them were really cool, you know. So just, you know, different things like that, really, like not just sports, but also like kind of non-sporty, like creative kind of stuff, you know, like drama or sort of. like painting and drawing and you know, whatever students are interested in, really. Mm. So we kind of tell them at the beginning of the day or the day before, you know, what's going to be happening the following day, and they can have a think and like decide with their friends which activities they want to do. Mm-hmm. And then we just run like 3 or 4 different ones in the afternoon. And then, yeah, evening meal again, like all together. So all the meals all together, all the staff and students sort of eat together. So they can just constantly kind of be getting to know each other and chatting to the staff and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Learning how to eat pizza, you know,
how to eat pizza.
Yeah. The Italian kids were going crazy. They were like, singling people out for eating pizza with ketchup. It was just losing their minds.
The pizza police.
Yeah, big time, you know, or eating pizza with a knife and fork. I was, you know, told that was not at all appropriate.
Really?
You know, so they were like, Raph, there is a Neapolitan pizza maker dying now because you're eating pizza with a knife and fork. I'm like, oh, soz.
How should you eat pizza then?
Just with your hand, yeah, just fold it like in a slice, obviously not the whole thing.
Yeah.
Like a massive calzone. So yeah, each slice you just sort of fold it together and just one hand it.
I see. Apparently. Just one hand it. And with the other hand, well, I suppose you need that to speak.
Gesticulating wildly, yeah.
Right.
So yeah, you know, that would be the standard sort of day. And then 2 days of the week as well, we would go out like all day. So, you know, we went to Alton Towers, like theme park, one day.
Alton Towers.
Yeah,
it's the best or biggest theme park in England.
Yeah, the biggest one.
Loved Alton Towers. Used to go there quite a lot when I was.
Oh, really?
Up. Yeah, because we lived in the Midlands, and Alton Towers is just sort of, you know, not far from Stoke-on-Trent.
Yeah,
and exactly. So you know, it's not too far if you live in the middle of the country. It takes you a couple of hours to drive there, and just amazing roller coasters, and it's just like Disneyland, but even better than Disneyland because
you don't get
all that Disney stuff.
No mice.
Yeah, no random like mice and other weird characters. Yeah. I think there is someone who did some stand up comedy about this once, but it always sticks in my mind of Mickey and his friends, right? You've got Mickey Mouse, his wife is Minnie Mouse, or his girlfriend, or whatever. And then his best mate, who's Mickey Mouse's best mate?
Oh, is it the dog?
It's the dog.
Or is it the duck? Is it Daffy Duck?
Well, there's Daffy Duck, but he's got his friend who's a dog, who's the one who wears clothes and stands up, Goofy.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Okay, Goofy is his mate. He's the dog. He wears clothes. He stands up. And then Mickey Mouse also has a pet dog. Called Pluto. Oh, Pluto,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
What happens when Goofy and Pluto meet each other?
Because same species.
Yeah, they're both dogs. Like, one of them's standing up, talking, wearing clothes. The other one's, like, naked on all fours. What's going on there?
It's the missing link.
Yeah, like, do you reckon when Pluto and Goofy meet, Goofy's like, mate,
you
need to put some clothes on. What are you doing?
Why are you walking around on your hands?
Yeah, but Goofy can speak and Pluto can't speak, I think.
Just not quite a full sentient being.
What's going on there? Like, what happened with Goofy? Is he just like from a different evolutionary step in the dog world in Disney? I don't know.
He shot ahead. They definitely bend the rules of evolution, don't they?
You know,
in the Disney universe.
Absolutely, yeah. There's all sorts of illogical animal related things going on in that universe anyway. So
it's like the one in Wayne's World. He says something similar. He's like how come I think he's talking about Daffy Duck is, or maybe it's Mickey Mouse, and one of them, he's like, how come he doesn't wear clothes, but when he comes out of the shower he's got a towel around his waist? He's like, what's that about?
Right, when Daffy Duck has a shower normally. Yeah, he wears like a shirt or a jacket,
that's it.
He's just wearing a shirt. I mean,
when he comes out of the shower, he's topless, so no shirt, but with a towel. You know,
he comes out of the shower, he's got a towel around his waist.
Yeah,
what? But what do you? You know, why are you protecting your dignity? Because you don't normally. Yeah, well, scandalous. This is why Alton Towers is better than Disneyland.
Because exactly.
Because when you're in Disneyland, you're queuing up for the rides. There are these nagging thoughts in the back of your head of like, why is Goofy wearing clothes and Pluto isn't? And why does Daffy Duck have a towel around his waist when he comes out? I just can't enjoy my experience. Yeah. Whereas at Alton Towers, you don't have any of those questions at all to worry about.
Just too busy getting your hair blown back, you know?
Yeah, you're just flying around on roller coasters and eating candy floss.
Yeah. Yeah.
Feeling a bit sick.
So, yeah, exactly. Upside down. Yeah, no, they had a really good time. They thought it was amazing, Alton Towers. And the queues weren't too bad either because we were quite early in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of missed all the horrendous queuing, you know? So they kind of got on quite a few after. They got some really impressive rides there now, you know?
What is the best ride? Because it's been a while since I went there. What's the best ride?
Yeah, well,
there?
I mean, I think they've still got the only fully vertical roller coaster in the UK, you know? Yeah. It's Oblivion. I mean, that's been there for years. You know, they've got... They had a new one called the Wicker Man, which was like a... The only like wooden it's like a wooden roller coaster, so it's like an old school roller coaster.
Yeah.
But obviously it's like, you know, super kind of fast and scary and everything, and the like flames shooting out of it and stuff. It's pretty insane.
I remember Oblivion. That's the one you mentioned there. It's the vertical roller coaster. I've been on Oblivion a few times because it's been there for a while now. It is really good.
Yeah.
And it's basically for the listeners to just get a picture of this. It's a vertical roller coaster. So, you know, normally roller coasters, it's like a train.
Yeah.
Right?
It's
going to be a difficult analogy to make.
Painting pictures with words.
Yeah, yeah. How can I explain? Like a train, okay. But Oblivion, it's kind of goes sideways on. So,
You still go forwards, but I know what you mean though. The cars are wider.
The car itself, it's one car and it's really wide and it fits, I don't know how many, 60 people in it or something. And there's like maybe three or four rows of seats, but it's wide rather than long. It's running along the track kind of like that. And it starts, you go click, 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 going up to the top.
Yeah, and that's the scariest bit, I think, when you the anticipation as you're going up, and it's just like kung 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 kung, and you're like, oh no, it's going so high in the air.
Yeah,
why is it so high?
And then the thing, there's like a few seconds while when it gets to the top, it turns a little corner in order to get itself into place to drop vertically for I don't know how many meters it is.
Yeah,
but it turns that corner, and that's also very frightening because you know. You can't really see where the edge is, and it's just slowly turning. And then you see the edge like falling away in front of you.
Yeah.
And the cool thing is that the thing starts to go over the edge and then it stops.
Yeah.
So it goes over the edge until it's maybe sort of at a 45 degree angle or more. And or maybe even all the way over, so you're looking down, and it goes,
you're just hanging,
and it just goes click and stops for a few seconds, and then it releases and goes ka-chunk, and you fall down vertically straight into a hole in the ground. So you fly down towards the ground, and then there's a little hole, and flum, you go straight through the hole, through a tunnel really fast, dark under the ground, and then you can pop out the other end. And, you know, by the time you come out at the other end, everyone's got like tears streaming across their faces and their hair is everywhere. And they're like exhilarated going, I want to do it again.
Yeah, exactly.
Amazing.
I feel like I'm there, you know, listeners, just close your eyes and sort of be transported.
So Oblivion, the Wicker Man, what else?
There's a few kind of crazy. There's one where I haven't been on this one, but you sort of almost like lying down. Where you kind of like you're flying through the air, like sort of hands first. So
like Superman.
It's called Air, and it's meant to make you feel like you're sort of flying along. You know, sort of because you're in a bit of a weird body position. Yeah, like Superman, basically.
Yeah.
I haven't been on that one. I'm not really that good with roller coasters, but I did go on Nemesis and Oblivion last time I went, you know, just to sort of face the fear a little bit. And it's exactly like you say, you know, beforehand you're just, you know, you're just terrified, you know, you're kind of bricking it.
Yeah.
And then And then once it, you come to the end, you're like, no, let's go again, you know, sort of thing. So,
best, yeah.
I mean, that's the cool thing. If you don't go in the holidays, you can just go round and round sometimes, you know, when it's not really too busy. So yeah, they had a whale of a time. They had a whale of a time down there. Yeah, for sure. And it was just like weird little things as well. You know, it's just when you get like a group of people together, like a group of kids, they're all like really, like, interesting, creative kids, a lot of them, you know. So you do like a little talent show and they're all breaking out all these little cool skills that they've got. But there were these two particular kids there who were just like, they were like virtuoso piano players, like, especially one of them. He was just like, he was literally amazing. He said he practices 2 hours every single day.
Wow.
And he's been practicing since he was, I think he said since he was, We worked out roughly the number of hours he'd done was at about 7,000 hours because he'd been practicing for that many years. I was like, every day? He was like, every day. And he was like, you don't understand. I'm going a bit crazy here because there's no piano for me to practice on.
Yeah.
So then we went on a search through the school and we found him a piano.
Really?
In the CDT building,
yeah,
under the staircase, there was a dusty old piano, but it was still pretty good, you know, and he played that like in the breaks.
No way.
And we found him a keyboard, but we went into Liverpool on the excursion. Mm. And, you know, in quite a few English cities, you know, for your listeners, you know, there are just dotted around in London in particular, just dotted around in public places, there are like pianos.
Yeah.
You know, so in, I think there's one in King's Cross, St. Pancras Station. Yeah. You know, they're all over the place. There's one in Leeds as well, in a big shopping center. And there's a few in the central Liverpool.
Yeah.
So him and this guy were like, oh, great. You know, like every time we went in, they just got down and started playing the piano. And he came home with like a pocket full of change. You know, he had like 15 pounds. People just giving him money because they're like, oh, you're amazing. You know, like, because there's a big bucket next to the piano. So yeah, if no one's using it, you're allowed to just sit down and busk, basically, and play the piano.
Where was the kid? Where was the kid from? Where was he from?
He's Italian, this kid. Yeah, yeah. Both of the piano players were Italian. One of them got 11 pounds and one of them got 15 pounds within about 20 minutes.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was just unreal. It was unreal. So yeah, they were just paying their way.
that's fantastic. I kind of know how that feels when you, if you play music or if you used to play music every day and then you just don't anymore. I have it with the drums because I used to play drums all the time. I was playing every day when I had a kit available to me. And even in London, when I didn't have a kit, I was in practice studios, you know, at least once or twice a week. And here in Paris, I'm not in a band and I haven't played the drums properly for 5 or 6 years. And I still, to this day, I'm going crazy. I'm just air drumming all the time. When I've got the wooden spoons in the kitchen, and I'm still like getting lost in the, it's sort of an infectious thing. It's kind of like you have to do a compulsive drumming. It's a bit of a problem.
Turn some pots over, you know. I'm sure everybody will love that at home.
Get the pots and pans out. Yeah, maybe that's what I should be doing.
The neighbours will be loving life.
There's no pleasing the neighbours sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. You can get like I know you can get obviously the electric ones, but is there something called like is there something with like string over them or something like that where you're basically just practicing the sequence, but you're not really making any noise?
You can get these pads that you strap to your knee.
And right.
The pad is it sort of replicates the same sort of, I don't know, the same surface or same sort of response that you would get from a drum.
Okay.
You know, when you hit a drum with a stick, the stick bounces back in a certain way. It's got a certain sort of responsiveness to it. You can get these pads that you put on your knee and they're supposed to feel like you're hitting a drum. They don't make a lot of noise. They just tap, really.
Okay.
And they're practice pads and you're supposed to be able to practice all your rudiments and paradiddles and things on those.
Yeah,
but I never learned all the rudiments and paradiddles.
Right.
So a little pad is no good to me. I need the whole thing. I need the hi-hats and the drums and the cymbals and stuff and the bass pedal so I can actually, you know, do the stuff.
Nuts.
Yeah, I can actually do the stuff that's in my head and I can't really do it on just a little pad.
It doesn't sound like much of a replacement anyway, does it?
No, not really. I mean,
a knee pad.
You can't imagine John Bonham from Led Zeppelin doing his thing on a little knee pad.
I'll just keep it up between gigs.
Yeah. It's not exactly the same. But anyway, I think the professional drummers probably swear by them. I mean, they probably think that they're really good because they, you know, you can imagine it's the sort of thing you need if you need to, if you want to work on all of your rudiments.
I guess, yeah. It's like anything, you have to be, you got to have the discipline, you know, sort of, it's not all kind of like on stage in front of 50,000 people. It's sort of, yeah, you got to do the drills.
Time. It's just like learning a language. Time.
Yes.
Regular practice, doing it every day, exactly. To the point where it becomes almost an unconscious, habitual response sort of thing.
Dreaming in the language.
Yeah. So, did you? What about the level of English of the kids at the school?
Yeah. It was. I mean, some of them were really like, you know, they were really good when they arrived already. You know, a few of them, like there was one girl in particular who was, you know, one of the best, especially for a young learner, you mm-hmm. know, one of the best levels that I've ever encountered, you know.
Oh wow.
So she, you know, she was almost to the point where, you know, well, it's basically she, you know, for her age, she was pretty much fluent, you know, for how, especially considering that she didn't live in the UK. Mm. You know, so you have a really good mix, and then we go right down to like right through the levels to, I'd say, not full A1, maybe like A2/B1, kind of uh-huh. like, you know, beginner and like pre-intermediate sort of level. Mm-hmm. Everybody could speak, you know, everybody could interact and kind of exchange a few sentences and things like that. Mm. But obviously it's hard to know because at the beginning, you know, some of the students, they're so shy, you know, they won't even really like look each other in the eye. And when they arrive, they're kind of like, oh my God, you know, what's going on? Like, why am I in Liverpool, not on the beach in Spain or something? but then you just see it like so quickly, like not even a week, just like by the end of the day or like a couple of days, like 2 or 3 days in, as soon as you like put them together with other students and, you know, that day, they just kind of come out of themselves. And then by the end of the first kind of week or so, it's just a real transformation sometimes, you know, like you just like kids are just like, they're kind of much more confident and their English is really just coming along without, you know, and that's the idea of it really as a summer school. That's what you kind of get that you can't replicate effectively in any other environment, really. It's like you just get that environment where people are just practicing all the time and without really thinking about it and just developing the confidence, you know. Mm. So maybe they might still have some mistakes, you know, they might still make some mistakes, but they're not worrying about that. They're just building that confidence and the communicative kind of side of the language skills, you know. And then in the classes, of course, you know, they can tidy things up.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's vital. I mean, I think that's kind of maybe the most important thing, just having it, you know, regardless of whether you're being absolutely perfectly correct all the time, obviously that's important, but the more important thing is just having that sort of base of confidence,
feeling
like you've owned the language to an extent that I guess these kids are having this kind of experience where English is the language that they're using, but it's just the medium through which they are connecting with the other kids and doing what's completely natural to them, because you know, children will, as you say, they'll just come out of their shell and they make friends because they can't do it any other way, you know. It's just the natural way they do it. And so if English is the language that it's happening in, then it'll just become part of their identity for that period. Owning the language is something I think really that's really important. Just it must be really, really healthy for them in terms of their English.
Yeah, so it's so cool, you know. Like, I mean, it's, I think just in definitely for the English, you know, but also just in terms of like a life experience. I don't want to sound like I'm sort of overplaying it, but I think just going to like when it's in your own language, you know, or whatever, just like a camp and things, you know, just doing loads of different activities and sort of spending time with like new people. In another country, in another language, it's just, you know, I wish I'd done it really when I was a kid, you know, because then all these kids now, like they can sort of keep in touch. And what was quite interesting was one of the kids who came from Spain. So her mum came to collect her on the last day. So I met her mum, we were chatting and I was sort of asking her, so what are you doing now? Like, where are you going? Are you going straight back to Spain? She was like, oh no, we're on like a big like European road trip. So I was like, all right, what do you mean? She's like, well, we're going to fly now to Amsterdam and I'm going to meet my husband, and then we're going to go and spend 3 or 4 days with this family in Holland. And I was like, all right, cool. And she was like, yeah, because that's someone who I met when I was a kid,
yeah,
at a language camp. So like her whole life, she'd like kept in touch with this other woman, and now she was an adult and kind of like, you know, sending her kids to language camps, but spending time still and getting like free holidays, basically, you know, from the people who she'd met when she was a kid,
yeah,
when she was a teenager, you know. So it was just full circle, you know. I was like, wow, that's unreal. So I think people do, you know, you do, especially now it's so easy to keep in touch. You know, they just make so many friends, you know, in the summer school. And yeah, like who knows, you know, you can just kind of bob over and see people in France and Germany and wherever, kind of all year round.
That's brilliant. Do you know if there are similar things for adults?
Yeah, I'm
because I mean, not obviously, sure, obviously your school is obviously for the teenagers. But when we did our last episode in April, I did get one or two messages from people saying, "Do you know if there are, you know, things like that for adults?"
Yeah, I'm
just wondering.
I'd have to have a think. Really, I mean.
I'm sure there
like in
are.
In terms of like a residential camp, it's definitely rare for adults. You know, short of just like going to university in the UK.
Yeah, university is probably the nearest.
Do a degree.
Thing. But that's just very hard. It's hard to get into an English university. It's very expensive. Yeah. But, you know, I guess people are thinking about just 2 weeks, you know, during the summer somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you sign up at a language school, you know, you can live with a family. You know, so you can kind of go to a language school in Leeds or Liverpool or London or something, and you know, you can live with a family. That's kind of similar, but yeah, I know what you mean though. It's not residential. You're not kind of 24/7 with all the same people. But
I'm sure that there must be these camps, language camps for adults. There must exist.
Imagine if they don't, then we should set one up.
I think yeah, definitely. Really, really. I think you get a lot of interested people.
It starts now. Yeah. Well, you know, it's always that's the thing, you know, if it was the case that, like, you know, my camp's for kids, you know, but if someone was like, listen, got all these like 20-year-olds who want to come to a camp, then, you know, you can maybe do like a separate session for them. But, you know, it could never be where the kids, you had like some kids and some adults like mixed together. Obviously that would never work.
Yeah.
But, you know, like a school like mine, because it's small, you know, you can sort of like tailor it to the needs of the specific students. But yeah, you know, it either has to be for kids or for adults, you know, not for both at the same time.
Yeah, you'd need to find another venue. You'd need to get a whole other team of trainers and stuff to deal with them.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's interesting. I mean, there are things for like young adults, you know, like sort of 17, 18 year olds, but I don't know of anything beyond that, really. But yeah, they'll be out there though. They'll be out there.
I expect so. I think people I haven't really looked into it, but it's probably worth Googling things like language camp adults or adult summer school.
Yeah,
England.
Be careful though.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I know.
Well, be careful because if you put adult in any search, the word adult in any Google search criteria
could be some unexpected results.
Yes.
Yeah. But I mean, I know from people in the industry, the summer school industry, that it's, you know, they find it's sometimes basically it's a bit more challenging to organize camps like with adults, or it can be a little bit, there can be some like tricky elements to it. Mm. You know, when you've got kids, it's kind of like, you know, you're the adult. And you're in control. You're in charge.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, if the students are obviously like older, it's kind of like it's just like a completely different dynamic. You know, so it's not like okay, like don't go out at night, please. It's like, well, but you know, like I'm 30, so I'm going to do what I want. You know, so
right.
It's sort of like yeah. But I mean, I guess then you don't have to worry about supervision. So it's kind of. You know, a different thing. But yeah, I think if people search for that, like grown-up language school or adult language school, maybe they'll find something cool.
Yeah, they might find the other type of adult language school, which is where you can learn English and, you know, satisfy your desires at the same time. learning by doing.
Yeah. Yeah, don't, yeah, exactly. Be careful of the search history, or it'll be littered with all kinds of problems.
Yeah, okay. So, very intense activity for what, 2 weeks?
Yeah, usually people go for like, I mean, I'd recommend probably like a maximum of 3 weeks, but usually people just go for two, and it's a good blast, you know. It's a good little session. Sometimes people go for longer, but I think 3-4 weeks, you know, is quite long, you know. Like, I think three is probably like, it's good, you know. Two is still perfect.
But I mean, you are running the school for 4 weeks in the summer, is it? 4 weeks?
Yeah, so this year we had students on site for just over 2 weeks. So we were there, like all the staff, for like 3 weeks. So that was, okay, it was shorter. But in hindsight, I'm glad that we had like a shorter session, because you know, it just is quite oh, sorry, that's my phone. Okay. It just is, you know, it is really intense. So I think for the first year, it's good just to take a small step, and then next year we can do like the full 4 weeks.
Yeah, but you're getting up at 6 a.m. and going to bed at midnight for the duration of the summer school course.
Pretty much, yeah. But it settles down, but yeah, there are quite a lot of days like that, you know, the majority probably.
So I'm just curious, what are you doing for the rest of the year then?
Yeah, recovering.
It's like all of your work is squeezed in. Well, I'm sure there's a lot of planning and admin and stuff to do, but like the vast majority of the actual work, I suppose, the teaching and stuff, is done in those 3 weeks. So yeah, how's the rest of your year spent?
Yeah, I mean, I do a lot of language work, so translation and things like that. Mm-hmm. But it's just, I mean, I knew before from working in summer schools and for a summer school company, like that there was a lot of work to be done between the summers. Mm. But only now I'm like fully appreciating actually how much you have to do, you know, because it's just, you know, even now, like, you know, it's September. So you think, oh, yeah, it's like a year away until next summer. Mm. But actually, it's like you have to kind of really get on with it now, you know. It's like, well, the marketing and the kind of redoing the website and sending people brochures and speaking to agents, and because, you know, obviously if you're going to send your kids to a summer school, you're not going to decide in like April or May, probably. You want to decide like 6-8 months in advance, you know, to kind of really think about it and choose the right one. So, you know, you're going to be contacting people probably like November, December. So if you want to reach those people, obviously you need to be out there like marketing and speaking to people like now, really. So yeah, it's, and then there's everything else, like making all the bookings and kind of writing the materials and planning things like the excursions and like buying all the resources. It's like, yeah, before you know it, the year's just gone, to be honest, you know.
A lot of planning, a lot of planning involved.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. So but it's like the question everybody always asks. They're like, yeah, so summer school, so what happens in the rest of the year?
Yeah,
but it's natural. But yeah, it's like a full year thing almost, really.
Yes.
So yeah,
I see. So any of my listeners who next summer will have kids between the age of say 12 and 16, can they send their kids to your summer school?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. It's we'll be ready and waiting, you know. They just can just get in touch through the website, yourenglishsummer.co.uk, or they can email me directly, or anything like that, really.
What's your email?
So Raphael. Yeah. Raphael at yourenglishsummer.co.uk. Okay. And yeah, they can just, or anybody who just wants some information, you know, like they can just email me and they can speak to me on Skype or, you know, through the website. There's a chat feature and things like that. So yeah, you know, it's just, we're there, and obviously on social media like Facebook and Instagram and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, you know, it's an exciting like thing, I think, for kids to try out, and definitely amazing for their English. So and also we you know, through doing the podcast as well, like thanks to you, I kind of met people who, like one person who came as a teacher, And then, you know, like you're kind of meeting people who also work in summer schools and stuff and just like exchanging ideas. So it's really cool. Like, thanks to you for kind of having me on the podcast. That's because right. it's been like super useful, you know?
Yeah. It's all right. It's a pleasure. It's nice to hear about, the project and stuff. I look forward to, you know, seeing it go from strength to strength. You're going to be very busy for the rest of your life now.
Yeah. Yeah, hopefully. It's just like really good fun, you know, like in the summer. I don't know, just it's just like cool, you know, like the kids just have like a blast, and it's like it's just sort of fun to organize that, like to sort of see them just like having a good time.
Yeah.
Just on a really basic level.
Yeah.
Just like a load of like sort of people meeting each other and just like making new friendships and like having fun.
Yeah.
And just like also like exploring a new city and kind of a new culture. Meeting Scousers.
So how did that go then, when all your kids from Italy, Germany, Spain and China and stuff, they're meeting Scousers?
Yeah, all right mates,
where are you from? You're from China. That's great. China. Yeah, mate, he's from China. What's your name, mate? Sean.
Yeah,
my cousin's called Sean.
That's basically what happened. Yeah, it was cool, you know. These kids, they're from this group called Positive Futures.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just really good kids, you know, like they just came down and just like did some sports and things like that, and just they all just rubbing along, you know, just I don't know, really. We did a big mingle, so we mingle. Kind of did this thing called human bingo. So we had all the Scousers on one side, all the locals on one side, and then all our students on the other side. And we just said something like, okay, go and find someone who is from Spain. So all the like locals just had to go in amongst all the students and just sort of ask them where they were from.
Where are you from, mate? You from Spain?
Exactly.
No, you're from Italy.
And it was like a competition, you know, when they found them, they're like, okay, yeah, it's his. She's over here sort of thing. It was like a little bit of a game.
Yeah.
Just for them to like break the ice a little bit, you know? And then, yeah, then they were just sort of like playing tennis and football and basketball and chatting and all that kind of stuff. You know, it was just like a really nice afternoon.
That's great. Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, keep in touch.
We'll do. Yeah. And thanks again. Thanks again for having me.
Yeah. You're welcome. Good luck with all the planning for next year.
Yeah.
And, you know, I hope you get some Lepsters.
Yeah, yes. No, it'd be cool. I mean, we had a kind of like an honorary Lepster last year because Agnieszka came as a teacher, you know. So
what's her connection then? She's a listener, is she?
Yeah, she's a listener. She could be listening right now. Ah. If you are, hi Aga.
So cool. So she heard you on the podcast and she was like, "Hey, that sounds cool. I think I'll send him a message. Like, do you need any teachers?"
Exactly. She's like, "That sounds like a blast." So she just came along, you know. It was as simple as that, really.
Fantastic.
You know, that's what I'd say. It's not complicated. Anybody thinking about it, yeah. You know, obviously if you want to teach, you still have to have, you know, do an interview and everything.
Yeah.
It's not just like, don't just arrive.
Well, here I am. I have this class? It's like, who are you? Sorry.
Yeah, exactly. There is a kind of a screening process.
Right. Good.
But yeah, we had an interview. We did an interview on Skype and everything, and had a good chat. Exchanged loads of emails. She contributed tons of awesome resources and ideas. Mm. And yeah, she's just full of energy. So I was like, yeah, definitely get her on board. You know.
Cool.
So yeah, she was part of our little team.
So, okay, those of you out there, if you are teachers of English, and I do have teachers of English around the world listening to this, and you're thinking, hey, maybe a few weeks in the summer teaching teenagers as with your English summer and Raphael, get in touch.
Mm. Yeah, because also people, you know, if they work in like a language school in another country, it's also the possibility of coming as like a group leader. So maybe not necessarily as a teacher,
mm-hmm.
but you could like bring some students and then sort of be responsible for them in a kind of pastoral capacity.
Yeah.
And maybe teach a little bit as well. It depends, you know. It's always quite flexible because it's something small.
Yeah.
But we can discuss the options.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, good. That's it.
Yes.
I never know how to end interviews on my podcast, Raph. I never ever know what to do. I'm always like, well, okay, right, well, let's stop the conversation. I just don't know how to do it. What do you think I should say at the end of these interviews that I have where it's like, right, well, you know, we need to stop now.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I think that's fine. You know, people usually just say, oh, thanks a lot and stuff. But I know what you mean about a little sign-off sort of thing, you know, nothing too cheesy.
Yeah.
But yeah, I started listening to this new podcast quite recently, actually, and mm-hmm. and they have like a really funky way of ending, saying how it's not the news. Basically, it's called Snap Judgment, this podcast. It's mm-hmm. quite interesting. And this guy's kind of like, this is not the news. And that's how he always ends each part. He does a little explanation of why this is not the news, yeah. how it couldn't be any further away from the news.
Right.
And that's always the end of each podcast. You know, it's quite creative.
On the news, what they seem to do, on like especially, yeah, BBC Radio News in particular, after they've just interviewed someone, they always say, Raphael Miller, thank you.
Yeah.
Like yeah, no one else, in no other situation in life do we say thank you like that. You know, guy in the bakery, thank you.
Yeah.
you know, like postman, thank you.
Yeah. I mean, be a bit formal.
Even
be a bit stilted.
Yeah, we do say thank you and then the name. Like we say, thanks, Mum.
Thanks, Dave.
Yeah. Thanks, Dave. But we don't say, Mum, thank you.
Yeah.
Which in a way is like
saying, be a bit profound, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it's like saying, Mum, that's, you know, I'd like to be able to end my conversations like that. If I'm talking to someone in the street that I've met.
Maybe just bring it in. Maybe just bring it in, man. You know, just start it up. As like it can be like a thing.
Like if I bump into, you know, Mrs. Smith, my neighbour.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like we're still talking. It's like, well, okay, well, Mrs. Smith, thank you. And then just leave.
You could cut them off as well. You know, you could be like, Mrs. Smith, because that's the thing, they always have to cut them off, don't they, on the news, that they're trying to get the last point in, and they're like, yeah, okay, thanks.
I'm afraid we don't have any time. Mrs. Smith, thank you. Yeah. Okay, well, Raphael Miller, this isn't the news.
Yeah.
So, Raphael Miller, thank you.
You're welcome.
So there you go, that was Raph and his summer school. Don't forget all the details on the website if you're interested in finding out more, either because you've got children who are at the right age and you're thinking maybe next year it would be a good idea to give them a chance to go to England to speak English for 1 or 2 weeks and have a really cool experience like that, then, you know, you could consider your English summer. The details are on the page for this episode. Also, maybe if you are, as Raph said, a teacher of English in your country, maybe you've got classes of students who are at the appropriate age, and you could maybe kind of work with Raph next summer and bring a group of teenagers. You could be like a group leader or something like that. Anyway, Raph's very open. You could send him an email and just, you know, ask him questions and things like that. Also, if any of you out there listening to this know of similar schools for adults, then, you know, get in touch, because I know that lots of people listening to this, certainly last time I got a few requests from people saying, you know, I'd love to do a similar thing as an adult. So if any of you listening know of projects like that or schools that you can go to during the summer where it's adults all kind of staying in the same place for a period of time and it's all very kind of cool and groovy, you do trips or activities and things as well as just studying the language in the more formal sense, do get in touch. I mean, you know, as Raph said, there are ways of doing similar things if you're an adult. Like, for example, you know, at the London School of English, where we both used to work, they had options where adults could come. I mean, the school is only for adults, the London School, but they had options where some of the adult students we had would come and they would, for example, take group classes in the morning, maybe, and either group or one-to-one classes in the afternoon. And then in the evening, they would be actually staying with an English host family. So that's kind of somewhere, something like the summer school experience, where you get to live with, you know, native English speakers. And so you're kind of talking in English all the time at breakfast in the evening, during dinner and all that stuff. But also you're taking classes, you're sharing your time with other learners of English, all sorts of different options. You might want to check out the London School. I think it's londonschoolofenglish.com, or just Google the London School of English. What is it? londonschool.com? Maybe. Let's have a look. Yeah, londonschool.com. It's a great school. Otherwise, if you're interested in studying English in the UK and you want to find some good schools, it can be difficult to choose good schools, right? How do you know which ones are good and which ones aren't good? A good way of making sure that you find the right kinds of schools, or find schools that are basically reliable in terms of their quality, use the British Council, because the British Council has a system of accreditation. Accreditation, that means basically when the British Council comes and visits all the language schools in the UK, and they inspect the language schools, and they have a series of criteria, you know, little boxes that need to be ticked in terms of quality of service and quality of facilities and things. And so the British Council goes around the country inspecting the different schools, and the schools that pass their quality assessments are listed on the British Council's website. So if you want to find good schools in the UK, you should just Google British Council accredited schools UK. British Council accredited. ACCREDITED schools. British Council accredited schools UK. And you'll find a list of schools that are basically recommended by the British Council, or schools that have passed the British Council's inspections for quality. And it's a great website because you can actually read the full reports. You can read all the comments by the inspectors and stuff. The London School is in that list, and you can see that they've got excellent results from their inspections by the British Council. Anyway, there you go. I say that because people do ask me that from time to time. They say, I'm going to go to the UK. Can you recommend a good school? Well, any British Council accredited school is going to be basically all right. If you're in London and you can afford it, go to the London School, because it's decent. Okay. All right then. Great. Great, great, great. There was some chat about roller coasters in that episode as well, wasn't there? Yes, there was, Luke. Why do you say that? I don't know, really. It just sticks in my mind. I feel like roller coasters and describing roller coasters is quite an interesting topic. Maybe I should do a whole episode about that. I love roller coasters. I don't like queuing up for roller coasters. Who does? But I do enjoy a roller coaster. So, I don't know. We mentioned Alton Towers. That's probably the best theme park in England. And they've got these really cool roller coasters and rides and attractions. What about in your countries? Do you have really awesome theme parks near where you live, or, you know, not far from where you live? If you do, what kinds of roller coasters do they have? And can you describe what the roller coasters do? You know, like I talked about Oblivion, which is this vertical roller coaster, which is basically just goes all the way up to the top. And then, you know, you turn a little corner and then you look over the edge and you hang there for a second, and then you just drop vertically into a hole in the ground. It's pretty simple, but very effective as a way of, you know, making you really scared and excited. What about in your countries? Tell us about some of the roller coasters that you've got in theme parks in your countries. I'd like to know about that. So that's all I have to say at this moment, except that a lot of interviews, I've been uploading a lot of interview stuff on the podcast recently. I've mentioned a couple of episodes ago that I've got this sort of backlog of interviews. In September, I just did loads of interviews with people. And so I'm just sort of like putting all those interviews out. And all the while, comments are coming in on my website, comments relating to recent episodes I've done, comments relating to the Alan Partridge episodes, comments about the one with Amber and Paul where we're talking about that Russian comedy club video. So many comments. And so, you know, in my head, I'm sort of having a conversation with you, but the conversation's a bit weird. It's like I say all these things on the podcast, all these comments come in, and then I'm like, I really want to respond to all that stuff, and I want to say things about the comments I've received, but I've got all these interview episodes I've got to put up. So once I've uploaded the interviews that I did in September, then I think I'll do some sort of rambling episode where I will maybe, you know, talk about some of the comments I've received on the website and other bits and pieces of news. We've got 4 crazy weeks ahead of us, my wife and me, because we're moving out of our flat. It's time to move out of this flat and move into one that's more suitable for, you know, for having a baby girl in our lives, because she's just starting to walk. She's, you know, up on her feet quite a lot. She's not able to walk yet, but she can kind of stand up without holding on to anything for about 10 seconds at this moment. And we're just, you know, we're just thinking, oh God, any minute now she's going to start walking around, and then she'll be loose in the flat, and then she'll be pulling all the things off the shelves. And the flat where we live now, there's not that much space. We've kind of outgrown this flat, so we've got to move to something bigger. First of all, there's not much space. Secondly, because we're in the roof of this building, most of the walls in the apartment are sloping. So these are walls that you can't put shelves on them, you can't put cupboards on them. And so all of our stuff is down at knee level, like down at child level. So all of our stuff, all our books and just everything is stored on shelves, which are at the perfect height for our daughter to just grab them and pull them onto the floor, which is what she wants to do. This is the thing that she loves doing the most, is grabbing objects and just chucking them on the floor. I don't know why. Why do children do that? They grab things and it's like, why did you grab that just so you could chuck it on the floor? I don't know. But anyway, that's what she's interested in doing. It's very cute, even that. I mean, you know, parents, we love our kids, right? And we find them adorable, even when they're like ruining everything in the flat. It's like, oh, it's so sweet the way she destroys all our possessions. How adorable. So anyway, it's time to move. So we've got to move out in the next few weeks, and we've got so much stuff in this place. So that's going to be a little bit crazy. And yeah, that means bye-bye SkyPod. Goodbye Terrace. I know, it's the end of an era. It really is. So that means I'm going to move Luke's English Podcast HQ out of the SkyPod and move into a new space. And so, you know, maybe I'll ramble on about that a little bit, because there's going to be a new SkyPod, like the, I don't know what I'm going to call it, but there will be a small space in the next flat where I'll be able to keep doing this. So I'm not going to be just sort of like homeless, as it were. The podcast will have its headquarters in the new flat. So anyway, I've got stuff to ramble on about. But first of all, I've got at least one more interview episode that's going to go up before I can just ramble on about stuff in general. Okay. Thanks again for all your messages on the website, for sending me emails and things. I say thanks just because it's nice to get responses from you. Download the Luke's English Podcast app free from the App Store, because it contains loads of other stuff that you won't get unless you've got the app. So there's lots of app-only episodes. Also, you can use the app to access all the premium content, and you can become a premium subscriber by going to teacherluke.co.uk/premium and follow the instructions there. There's a growing library of premium episodes. In the premium episodes, I go in depth into language, teaching you grammar, vocabulary, pronunciation. Okay, so become a member of LEP Premium. It only costs you about the price of a coffee or a beer every month, and you can get full access to all that content, which you can get through the app or online. Okay, otherwise, just visit teacherluke.co.uk, and that's where you can get all the information you could ever need. I mean, it's not Wikipedia, but, you know, if you've got questions about the podcast and stuff and transcripts and everything else, teacherluke.co.uk is the place that you can go to, if you can access it. I understand that some people out there in podcast land, for whatever reason, your governments in all their wisdom have decided that teacherluke.co.uk is far too dangerous for you to have access to. I mean, imagine what would happen if all of you could access my website. I mean, your society would crumble to the ground. I don't really know the logic behind why my website is blocked in some countries, but it is apparently. So sorry if you can't access all my stuff, but I don't know, you'll have to find some clever way of accessing it with a VPN. I'm going to stop speaking now because this episode's going to get too long. Yes, I have drunk the coffee which I had at the beginning of this episode, and can you tell? The caffeine is now racing through my system, causing me to ramble in this manner. Okay, so it has to stop. I've got to go out and do various things, and then uproot our lives and move them to a new flat. I'll speak to you about that in maybe some more detail soon, without giving away too much personal information, because I'm not into that kind of thing. All right, then. So, good. Thank you for being you. Thank you for being an excellent audience. And I'd also like to thank Raphael Miller for being on this episode, just like I'd like to thank all the people for being on my podcast that I have not thanked for any reason. Okay? Luke, stop talking. That's it. That's enough now. Okay? Okay, that's enough. Thank you for listening. Speak to you again soon. Goodbye. Bye. 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 Thanks for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.